Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. And this show it's a big show for me because this is one subject or type of music I'm least familiar with. But it's very fascinating because I played some of this stuff in the early days, especially my early days when I played accordion. And so we're going to take a listen to this. I want to introduce my guest, Sherry Goldsmith. It's so great to have you back on the show. And she was on a couple months ago when I had Jessica Barron on from Guitars in the Classroom. And she is one of the artist teachers that works with the kids at Guitars in the Classroom. And but also she's a multi-instrumentalist as far as I can determine. Besides a little bit of guitar and ukulele, she plays trombone and accordion, and we'll find out much more. So, but anyway, I want to thank real quick Jessica Barron for introducing me to Sherry. It's really a pleasure, and I finally got her on the show to talk about her. So welcome to the show. It's so great to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's really great to be here.
Let me make sure that you're up. Let me test your mic again one more time.
Thank you. Is that working?
Hold on. Put it in six or something. That one?
Right there. I think that's where you... Yeah, you're...
I can't see it. There we go. There we go. All right, let me check this one. Let's see if you're getting power now.
Can you hear me now?
It's not coming through. Huh. All right, let me boost it up even more.
Boom. Boom.
It should be louder than that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
How about now?
That's better.
All right.
That's better.
There it is.
There it is.
Bam.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. Sorry about that. But anyway, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. Now that I got volume on you, let me get you a little more regulated. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about your background, because you play a lot of instruments, and it also has to influence how you play these instruments and your approach to music. So let's kind of get a little bit of where you started, how you got into music. When did you first start playing?
I played... as a kid, I had a very short stint as a viola player, and that did not hold my interest at all. And then I played keyboard for a little while, and then I had a very long break. And somehow, I ended up. this is a really long story. I'm trying to think of how much of this I should get into. I ended up actually doing dance stuff for a friend's crazy project. and I think it was the Maggot Puppet Theater.
Okay.
Yeah, accordion-based, really fun, very creative project. And then somehow I ended up playing jazz harp in a goblin-themed jug band.
Okay.
Yeah. And that turned into me playing the washtub bass.
You don't hear about washtub bass. Yeah. I actually know people that played that, but I mean, it's very rare.
I happen to know a lot just because I then ended up playing in the Sour Mash Hug Band for a long time, and I still do sometimes. Just we've scattered, so we don't play together as much. But that band kind of is eclectic and started out doing a lot more Americana type of stuff, and then as we kind of traveled a lot and played a lot of different places. So as we kept moving, we picked up different forms. So that's kind of a big part of my origin story with interest in klezmer and Yiddish music, because that was a project that wasn't solely focused on that, but it was somewhere where I could try out this music and try out the stuff I was learning. And we would do things like a couple times we went to Romania and just studied Romanian music, and then we'd throw some songs in the band while also doing originals or also, playing early jazz and ragtime and that kind of stuff. So, and in that band also, I had a lot of freedom to play a bunch of instruments. So I wasn't just the bass player or just this. I was, we traded off who would be leading the songs as far as vocals go. And there were songs people sang together. And I also was, playing accordion, or I was playing trombone, or I was playing the ukulele. We were switching instruments a lot more in that band.
Now, were you more like just experimenting? You'd pick it up and just play it, or did you take lessons for each of the instruments?
It started as an experiment. Some of them are more user-friendly than others, as far as just picking them up and playing them. I have taken lessons with the trombone. I haven't done much study on the accordion, I think because I played keyboard as a kid, and it's...
You took piano lessons?
Yeah, when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done different music classes over, I'm always trying to learn more. Mm-hmm. I definitely like studying and I like learning things.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun for me to have a teacher. So, that's like, oh man, if I start working more, I'm going to take trombone lessons again. Like that's like exciting for me to study.
Now, when did you first start playing music? How early?
I don't remember. I don't remember when the keyboard was. I did keyboard for a few years when I was a kid, so I'm not sure.
But very young?
Yeah,
like
as a
four
kid.
Or five?
No, a little older than that. I think like 7, 8, something like
that.
Oh,
okay.
But then there was a very long break, and it kind of came back in my life with a
Now,
vengeance.
Let me ask you, and I'll explain why I'm asking this question, because it has to do with the stuff I've discussed with Jessica on Guitars in the Classroom. In your family, what music was played? Obviously, you were listening to a lot of music. I'm sure your parents played music all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what would they play?
Well, my mom is obsessively just listens to like the Israeli dance music, and that's what she does. She goes Israeli dancing. So her pop, the Israeli pop dance music. And then my dad was actually more of the musical influence on me. Not that you can necessarily tell by what music I've been playing and performing, but my dad was the one that got me really into classic rock and, like Black Sabbath and, I don't know, all these kind of...
So you were a rocker.
I was.
Oh, very cool.
I was never really just one thing, but yeah.
No, the reason I was saying that, because the first time I had Jessica on, we were talking about, I started early, like at about 4 and a half. But my mom played the radio all the time. So we were exposed to that stuff.
Us too.
And when I was in school, we studied about, we had to take pedagogy, and they talked about when you start out early, your brain starts picking out all these little bits and pieces, and then eventually you'll start putting them together. So they would notice like a child will go to the piano and start playing melodic lines because it's basically assimilating all he or she is assimilating all of this information that they've been hearing because they're soaking it up like a sponge. And when my older brother was taking lessons, I literally would play what he did by ear, the lesson. Nice. And of course the teacher turned to my mom and said, well, that's very good, but he's learning it. He's learning all the bad things. We need to get him in there now to start. Story of my life. Always did it the wrong way, but it worked. But anyway, so that's interesting. So I think that's a lot too. I just wanted to point that out because your children, for those guys out there, the people out there that have children, expose them as much music you can because they'll start assimilating that. And it's important for them in terms of ear training, hearing and stuff. And it'll, like the whole thing with guitars in the classroom, learning how to play guitar, it improves all the other subjects dramatically. And Jessica brought in information that just, you know, they've done studies on it. And it's amazing how much children in our other studies and in general. A friend of mine, her child is 7 now, and I told her to listen to have her child listen to a lot of different music, and she's into different languages. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's like second nature. So it's really important. But let me ask you this. You mentioned, and I can't pronounce this,
Klezmer?
Klezmer.
Mm-hmm.
Klezmer Yiddish. So that's a type of music form?
So Yiddish is the language.
Right.
And it's sort of, I'm using Yiddish, like Yiddish song or Yiddish swing to describe the vocal pieces, whereas I'm using the term klezmer to describe the instrumental pieces.
Okay. So klezmer is instrumental, type instrumental music.
Yeah, mostly. I mean, some of the klezmer tunes do have some words to them, but it's more focused on the
Well, give us a little bit, as much, I know I'm like really digging in here, but the evolution of this, where the music came from?
Well, I'll do my best. and this is really like, you know, there are people that are absolute experts, mm-hmm. ethnomusicologists that have really gone in depth and studied this, and I'm not one of them. but I definitely try to read and do my best. So I'll do my best here. So the music originated in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's... So a lot of what my band is playing now, so the music comes from Eastern Europe, there's kind of a classical form, and that's a study in and of itself, because a lot of this tradition was extinguished with World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So you have not just the klezmer music, but the knowledge of the dances, and a lot of Yiddish and Yiddish speaking. So you have the language, you have the music, you have the dances, you have traditions. Some of the revival has been really trying to keep it classic and keep alive this tradition. And then there are other people that are trying to take this old form and make it current and keep it alive. And I think both of these things are very relevant, and very important.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm personally enjoying doing with Shiri and the Shiri Beams is to be playing some of these Eastern European klezmer songs that have dances, that have history, and then also keeping alive some of the stuff that happened when, you know, you have the early 1900s, you have the 20s, when Eastern European Jews are immigrating to the U.S., and they're in New York, and it's meeting jazz. Jazz is coming up, and there's this really cool sound. You know, you have the clarinet guy who, yeah, he's gigging, he's playing the bar mitzvahs, he's playing the weddings, but he's also going and playing like at jazz clubs. And they had klezmers and jazz musicians playing music for movies back then, because silent
right.
were silent
and you'll,
movies.
And when you hear some of this, it'll sound like movie music.
Yeah, and some of it is. So you have this sort of like, and that's really, I feel like when you hear, you know, what's like now cartoon music and circus music, like how much of that kind of just comes from this fusion of Eastern European, which is obviously in and of itself a very big area, but mm-hmm. some of it's Russian, some of it might be Romanian or Hungarian, so, you know, some of it might be all sorts of influences. And then that meets the American sound
that's
here.
Now, the the klezmer and the Yiddish, was that influence or how much of an influence was gypsy music? Or was there?
I mean, I think there was a lot. Because there's...
Because some of the dance forms sound very, to me, like gypsy type of dance rhythms. And
like Rome. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot of crossover as far as melodies go. I mean, what you end up having happening is you'll hear a tune and then... somebody Russian is like, oh, I know this song because it's Russian. And then you start to hear like a Rome band playing and you hear some familiar things. So I think there was a lot of crossover and it becomes like maybe just this melody came from here, but it's stylistically played by these people in this way now. But, mm-hmm. you know, I don't really know how much, I don't think there's any way to really know the origin of a song.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, and a lot of folk songs go be even farther. Some songs are even that you would think like, I think even something like Greensleeves is even earlier. It yeah. might go back to Roman times.
And there's like a klezmer song I know that's like also a Greek song. And I don't know, yeah. you know.
The same melody. They yeah. use the same melody. There's but that's interesting. But because we got to remember what she's talking about with Eastern European, it's a lot of different areas.
Yeah.
You know, there's the Ukrainian, Russian, there's Austria, there is some German, there is Romanian, Transylvania, and all of those places, there's a lot of different folk music. Some of it's similar, but some of it is distinct, and all of that's an influence to a very vital, at you know, I think even today, it's still a vital place of a lot of different forms of music.
Mm-hmm.
And folk music... Like she was saying, in terms of the film, you know, when you watch a Western and you hear them playing the little piano thing, those are old folk melodies, usually English or some are Irish. But the little piano things are old stuff that's what they used. And what we consider some of it as, you know, music for cowboys or whatever is actually a totally different, it came from a totally different place. So I think it's kind of fascinating and we're going to play in a minute some of the music, and you'll feel it'll feel like the 20s. I mean, some of the instrumentation is very classic.
And definitely with this particular band and our instrumentation, I think it because of the instrumentation, the people that we have, it is definitely that has that American influence. Because if you were, I believe if you're doing really just a more classical from Eastern Europe, you know, 1800s sound, it wouldn't necessarily have as much of the brass and those instruments in it. You might still have the clarinet. But, you know, I know older that the older klezmer, I believe, was like originally violin, flute. I mean, it just depends on how far back you even want to go back with any folk music. Mm-hmm. Because before people played accordions, they were playing bagpipes. But anyway, you know. But anyway, I digress. Sorry.
But that's interesting, too. So now, you've played in several different bands, and the clips that we're going to play tonight are from the Shiri Beams, her group, the Shiri Beams. So kind of set up a little bit the Shiri Beams. How is it different from what you were doing before, and what's the concept behind them in terms of what you're trying to do musically? I assume from listening to it, and tell me if I'm wrong, you're taking the traditional stuff, but you're making it hipper to, you're, like you said, making it more modern.
Somewhat. I mean, I'm doing.
Or you're more strict.
We don't have recorded a lot of the traditional klezmer. We only have one instrumental number on there. But we are keeping definitely a vintage feel for everything. That's very important. And I really like that particular sound of. There's still the Eastern European music coming in, but there's also this just American jazz that sort of infuses
right.
it.
So
and
you
being
were
able to go back and forth between those two. So you have, and Yiddish is so important, and having the Yiddish language being sung, having the songs still being there is a big part, is an important thing. But we don't have as many of the instrumental songs recorded, but that's also an important part of the
But
sound
I mean,
and stuff.
The fact that you're jazzing up some of the stuff. That's making it more contemporary, right?
Well, I mean, those are the songs that are already were jazzed up. That's not necessarily my infusion. Like, you had people doing that in the 30s. You had, like, the Barry sisters, who were formerly the Bagelman sisters, taking a lot of Yiddish songs and jazzing them up. And even when Bimir Bis Dushane is on the recording, and that's one that was, you know, sung, popularized as a jazz song. So maybe originally it wasn't necessarily written that way. You have this relationship, as you'd said, between the movies and the
Well, let me go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and play, and you're going to have to say the name. You're going to have to say this name. It's the Shasha.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Shasha de Redegate.
Now, that name, what is that? What language is that? Is that Yiddish?
That's Yiddish, yeah.
Okay, because it's some of them, like the one you were just talking about, the...
Bimir Bis Dushane.
That sounds German, or looks German.
It does, and Yiddish and German are actually very similar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yiddish... is written historically with Hebrew letters. Well, not historically, it's written with Hebrew letters, but it's really similar to German in a lot of ways. There are different pronunciations, and people that are Yiddish linguists get, I think it's a big pet peeve when people mispronounce Yiddish words as though they're German.
Because it sounds like some of the stuff, to me it sounded German when you're singing some of the lyrics.
But, sure.
Well, let's listen to this one. And then we'll talk a little bit about the style, but you'll get a good, this one's a good indicator of the style and form of this, of the music, so you can hear it.
Shasha is a shoin spay, boy, oi, der rebe gay. Shasha, der rebe steht, der steht schon bei der Tier. Shasha, der rebe heist, oi, oi, der rebe. Shasha de Rebbe zog, das a jorek mir. Oi, di Rebzen, oi is dos a Rebzen, wie sie geht, also breit, fin der Schule heim. Chassidim lech, Talmidim lech, tanzen, singen, kegen mir. Oi is dos a Rebzen, as a jorek mir. Chassidim lech, Talmidim lech, tanzen, singen, kegen mir. Oi is dos a Rebzen, as a jorek mir.
Get an idea of the form. There's a lot of interesting things happening in there. First of all, let's break it down. So you have accordion,
mm-hmm.
you have trumpet,
mm-hmm.
guitar,
mm-hmm.
drums,
mm-hmm.
what else?
Clarinet. Violin.
Violin.
And I think that's everything. Yeah.
So, and then the vocal. But the now I'm only playing a little segment. The song's a little more involved. There's more to the arrangement, but you got a chance to hear all the different instruments. And it's interesting how they play against each other too, especially the soloing.
Mm-hmm.
The trumpet and the clarinet, I think, play a lot against each
mm-hmm.
other. And it's not like they're, it's not just question, answer. They're playing counterpunnily to each other. And now they are improvising, obviously, mm-hmm. in the song. But is that part of the style that counter? Because they're doing things kind of against each other. That's kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but it seems very in character to the style of the music. I don't know.
And that would actually be a way better question for them. You know? But yeah, I mean, this particular piece is, we're sort of like, this has got the jazz influence in it. So I'm allowing, you know, or we're, that doesn't sound good, but you know, we're, it's open for that to play with the melody. Cause I think if you, like Naftule, this very famous Naftule Brand, this very famous clarinet player, that he said that he never, played the same melody twice ever. But even that, it's the soloing in klezmer is different than soloing in jazz. You don't diverge as far from the melody. So there is kind of that still happening with this piece where it's not getting, you know, how in like a jazz, like it, things can really just, they just go and they take their own thing. So it's still holding closer to that, but they're, but it's getting a little bit more into the jazz.
Right, right.
Range.
Well, his, the, especially the clarinet with the bends and stuff, he does things that are more characteristically jazz, but it's still, you're right, it's stricter to the melody. And you'll and notice that, I mean, now my background a little different, very much like a polka. I mean, it's like spot on. You take the vocal away, a little more accordion, I would never know the difference. I mean, I just, I it'd blow me away.
I mean, I think the sousaphone really can have that effect too, but...
And that's interesting too, and I'm going to play a piece later where he does like a bass solo, and Doug's a bass player. And so it's interesting what he's doing because he's really moving around. Usually you just hear this boom, boom, boom.
No, Andres Trujillo is on the sousaphone, and he's fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah, it's really fun being able to have gigs with a sousaphone player.
It's a whole different sound, but it's really cool. But he's
epic
really,
solo. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He knows what he's doing. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting.
He's no joke. For sure.
So, but anyway, that's really, that's fascinating how that's kind of set up. Now I'm going to play, let's go ahead and play the, oh God, I can't pronounce this book.
By Mirbis Duchesne.
Okay. So now I'm going to take it, there's where all the solos happen and then it'll end up. So we'll take a look at that. And you, again, this is another one where the clarinet and the trumpet play against each other in, it's a counterpunnel type of thing. So let me go ahead and play that, and we'll talk a little more how this one is set up. So say it again.
By Mirbis Duchesne.
By Mir. Sorry. I could hear that. I think I've heard that song.
Yeah.
It sounds very familiar.
Yes,
it's... in several movies. I think I've heard that. I could just see it like an old gangster movie. You go into the club and the girl singing that with the band behind it.
So this is this is the most famous Yiddish song.
Oh, really?
Which is not saying much, but it is. And this song was I guess the manager of the Andrews Sisters. Have you heard of the Andrews Sisters?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this is the song that made them famous. So the manager of the Andrews Sisters saw someone singing it somewhere and bought the rights to the song from the man who wrote it, Shalom Segunda, bought the rights to it for $30. And then the Andrews Sisters became quite famous with it, and they didn't do it in Yiddish. And I do a verse of it in Yiddish. I don't do the intro in Yiddish because I don't really think the intro part is like really PC in Yiddish, the old words that it has. So I choose not to do that. And I like the English translation a lot. So they did it in English and it became quite famous. And then I guess Shalom Segunda was quite unhappy about it for a very long time because he didn't really make any money off of it. Eventually there was a lawsuit and a settlement, but yeah, this is quite a well-known one.
What's the name mean?
To me, you're beautiful.
To me, you're beautiful. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's interesting. Now, let me ask you something about your vocals.
Okay.
Now, is there a specific technique and style? Is that, I mean, it sounds like you're singing a certain type of style, the tonality that you're getting?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I definitely like...
I mean, if you were singing just like a regular folk song or popular song.
Right. I mean, I think most of what I do and what I've done has been kind of a vintage feel in general. That's been an aesthetic of mine for a long time, at least. As far as performance-wise, like, I love listening to all sorts of music and appreciate all... But I'm not like... Like, I love R&B, but I definitely cannot sing R&B, and I don't as, like, for performance. So, yeah, I think that's definitely a focus of mine is to keep things feeling
that. Because it sounds like the way you... Now, again, I don't know... I'm not well-versed in Yiddish, so I don't know how the pronunciation, but it sounds like there's an accent or a pronounce. You're doing a certain type of very...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Some of the words. Like, say, for example, Zog.
Zog farvos.
Okay. So I'm just trying to think. And when you sing, there's like a, it's not the proper term. I don't know, but it sounds like you're singing it with an accent as opposed to.
I am trying. It's hard because I heard Yiddish through, as a kid, through, you know, mostly through my dad's and my grandma's expressions. And they had pretty heavy New York accents, and their Yiddish is not, like the classical dialects that are sort of studied now and are recommended. And like, oh man. So like with Zog Farvos, this song is actually not done in like a Galicianer versus Litvak dialect. It's not done in a specific dialect or different dialects of Yiddish. It's actually done in the like musical theater dialect, which is a little bit easier to sing out in. And I just recently discovered UCLA has a great program, and they did a one-day workshop, and I went and studied with Lawrence Emberg, and he told me about the musical theater dialect, and I was like, how did I not know about this? I've been interested in this for so long. And then bam, I learned something. And then I was just recently in Canada studying at Klez Canada with Sasha Lurie, and she had a vocal techniques class, and that just like kind of blew my mind, all these different ways you can use the voice, which I'm still just like at home, you know, trying to like, what happens if I do this pitch and raise my larynx, you know, trying to figure these things out. So
some of it has like, it's the term isn't precise, but it sounds like makes it sound more vintage. There's in your vocal, it's kind of a nasally type of sound, like similar to the old, you know, or they were sitting with the megaphone type of thing where it was kind of a nasalier type of sound, which isn't your normal voice.
Well, and she, one of the things I was studying at Klez Canada is she's talk about different techniques, and I might be also falling into nasal, although I try not to. But she does talk about different ways to make these different sounds. That you can use, and not all of it is necessarily nasal. So, because there's all these different parameters of the voice, there's all these different things. Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a weird and complex instrument. So there are different ways to make sound happen. So,
but the sound, even
what, but I do sometimes go into nasal because it's a nice tool, and there's also like there's twang and there's there's all these other.
But things. It gives you that. It sounds vintage.
We're talking about me again. Sorry.
No, I mean when you sing it. That nasal type of voice sounds vintage to me. I mean, at least that's what I'm picking.
And I like it sometimes too. You know, it's like you're not always supposed to do that, but sometimes it's just nice to have that sound. You know, a little
no, it's cool. I mean, but it gets that kind of sound like when you listen to an old record player, the little, you know, with the big horn on it. It had that kind of sound, and I think that's some people would mimic that. To try to get that, some of it, especially the old crooners and stuff, not necessarily for Yiddish music or klezmer, but I mean in terms of a lot of the old records of those singers.
Yeah.
You know, they would try to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, before we play some more stuff, I want to go through some of your instruments. She brought a couple of things down here. Your main instrument is the banjo uke. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called?
I mean, okay, I call it a banjolele.
Banjolele, okay.
But I did, you know, I did have somebody once come up to me after a show and tell me that actually it's called a yuka banjo. I don't know if that's like a thing or not. I
never heard that.
But... I don't know. I didn't have an actually, but I definitely think banjolele has a better ring to it. I don't know if
we were talking before the show. I have an 8-string banjo mandolin, which is called a banjoline.
Yeah, I mean, I
think banjolele, it sounds easier off the tongue. But go ahead and grab it from it. Tell us a little bit about this, because this is an old instrument.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry, baby. this is, I think it's from the late 30s. I got this at a it was not a mom and pop, it's actually a father-daughter luthery store. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of it? It's called the Fifth String. It's in Corvallis, Oregon.
No.
Really
but
cute
fascinating.
Store.
I have to go there.
Yeah, a really cute store. And this was a while ago. So I think this is before these things became really fashionable, because I was coming back home from a tour and I had like just enough money to get back home with gas and buy this for $80.
That's not bad for $80.
Yeah.
That's an old instrument.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I've put some work into it since. This is a new head. It's got pickups now. These are new, new-ish. By new, I mean like I changed them 10 years ago. But yeah.
Go ahead and hold it up and flip it to the back. You got to check this out. There's the pickups. Go ahead and point it over there.
We're over there.
You can see there. And then she has the little plug for the plug
is.
In. But they're contact pickups on the head.
Boopy doop.
So it's very, very, very cool.
And they're very potent. I mean, it's
well, that thing cuts. Just play a little bit right now. You can hear
and
it.
And I normally play this with a pick, but just to like... You know,
it cuts through really loud.
Yeah, it's really loud. And that's why I really normally perform with this one, because if I'm playing with a big band... it's nice to have something really...
You need to take this to... You know who might be interested in making this is Taylor. Because I talked to Taylor once about the banjo... Deering. Because Deering was making banjolines.
Don't they make them?
I don't know if they make a uke one.
Oh, I bet you they do.
But they're real interested in old...
I don't know that.
They're really interested in old art, you know, ancient ones that they want to study the construction. They would love to see this. This is very cool. And it's old enough where it's patent applied for. So, and it says back here, uking on the bridge. So I don't know if that's a standard bridge on there. I don't know.
It might have been replaced.
This thing is pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it's got some new.
Was it hard to find a head this size?
I don't remember. I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I just went in and...
Because this one doesn't even... I don't think... This is actually... this isn't plastic.
Maybe.
I don't
think
so. It looks like... I forget what type
of... It's been replaced. Like, I ripped the
Now, do you ever use a standard uke when you play live, or you just use this?
Usually for live, I've used that. I'm trying to think if there's any situations where I don't. I just don't have a standard uke that. Oh, maybe, like if I'm doing something really small, like I did a very casual thing with my husband, who's a violin player, and I think we were like, it was just the two of us, and we were doing kind of like folky stuff, and so I didn't bring that, you know, because for me that's like a loud thing, you know, and I wanted a sweeter, quiet sound. So yeah, in instances like that, they don't happen that often. But when I'm doing a smaller thing, then I'll.
And this has all nylon, nylons.
Yeah, as far as the ukulele goes, for sure.
So what else do you? You play more like trombone and accordion in the act in the group too.
In this band, yeah, and it kind of depends. Like, we had at the beginning of the month, we had a gig at somebody's private residence, and I had an accordion player. Joellen was playing with us, so. I brought that and sang, and I didn't even bring my trombone because it was like just like four or five of us, and it was really hot. it was a smaller ensemble, and I didn't want to have the trombone in the sound. And then we just recently did we played at Seven Grand, and that was a bigger group, but we didn't have accordion for that one, so I did bring my accordion and I went. And switch between the three instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So in some things I played that, and some things I played the accordion, and another song.
Now, on Bymir, who played accordion?
Isaac Shankler.
And then who played guitar?
On this, Luca Pino.
Okay, and then who played clarinet and trumpet?
Victor Babushenko on the clarinet, and Jim Sherry on the trumpet.
Okay, so with that piece that we heard, that real nasally trumpet sound it's a mute, right?
Yes. And thank you for reminding me, because I would have been so mad at myself if I didn't say everybody's name. So
yes.
Thank you so much.
So is that the core band, or is it change?
It is mostly the core band. Some of it changes. We have we also have Jesse Ward on guitar a lot of the time, and Joellen Lapidus on accordion a lot of the time. Isaac hasn't done any of the gigs with us. I've invited him, but he's very busy. There's some double people.
So live, you tend to play this and then maybe the trombone and sing. So you don't really have much time to do any of the other instruments.
Well,
you play a lot.
It depends on who's there. If we have the full everybody thing, then yeah, probably just that and trombone and singing. If we don't have an accordion player, I'll play a lot more accordion.
Okay.
Especially on instrumental. I don't like singing and playing accordion.
I can understand that.
I don't enjoy it. It's not fun
now,
for me.
Let me ask you, as an accordion player, this is a tangent. What accordion do you have?
Oh my goodness, what is? I don't even remember what brand my accordion is. No, it's cute.
It's a little one.
It's little.
Does it have buttons and keys, or two buttons and buttons?
Buttons and keys.
Because we had big ones like Cordovox. The Cordovox was heavy.
Yeah.
You couldn't stand up and sing.
No, I used to play a 120 bass, big vintage rhinestone. You know, those big old accordions. This thing was this big, and if I sat down with it, it would be like this. And then at some point, I just, you know, it's like, I'm gonna be
it's
real
too
with
big.
Myself.
It's too big.
This is physically hurting me. I'm going to get something a
now,
little smaller.
Occasionally you play guitar. This is like one of the guitars that you use for teaching, right?
Yeah, this
so
is
go
my,
ahead, bring this out. We might as well show. This is a cool little guitar.
I know. And I believe this was donated for the two guitars in the classroom for our work.
This is a Martin, a little small scale Martin.
Yeah.
It's got a Stratobon neck. It's laminate, but it's, look at these. These are really good heads. Martin Schaller or Grovers. I think they're Grovers. And it's just a beautiful little guitar. It's a little small for me. I got big budgy hands, but
it's great for me.
It's really, I'll let you just strum a little bit so you get an idea what this thing
and
sounds
I think it's
like.
Still in the open tuning because we do that with our kids. Yeah, it's a lot, but yeah. It's got a nice little sound, you know?
So you use this more for teaching.
Yeah, I definitely am not much of a guitar player, so I use this for teaching, and I definitely favor other instruments a little
now,
bit
with
more.
Now, with the ukulele, since the tuning is, do you ever use a mandolin?
No, I don't. My husband plays mandolin, but I don't play mandolin.
Because it's the same tuning. It would seem that wouldn't be that difficult. It would be something that you might...
Yeah, I just haven't fiddled on them much.
No pun intended.
I know. Little intended.
No, but anyway. Now, one of the other things, we're almost out of time, but and I want to play the last piece, which shows another dance style. Let's talk a little bit about the different forms real quick, because one of the songs that you showed me, one of the things it says it's a hanga.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a style of mm-hmm. a dance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of give us a little overview of the different dance forms.
I will do my best. I am still a student of this. Fortunately, I just came back from Klez Canada, so I learned more than I had known before, for sure. So, yeah, the thing with the instrumental songs is that they're meant to be danced to. And so when you, as a musician... when you learn the dances, you understand how to play the songs so much better. And I think that that's something that I had heard a bunch. And then finally, just this last visit to Klez Canada, because I actually studied dance instead of just like trying to run around and do all of the instrumental stuff, which is also amazing. But that was where it really drove home the point to me. So you might have a hanga, you have a jok, which is a slower type of dance. You have bulgars, you have freilachs. Those are both faster and can kind of sound like each other at times, but have different rhythms and a little bit different rhythm expression and a little bit different phrasing. So they're shares. Those are also faster. So there's kind of just these different forms.
Now, are they specific signatures? Like, I don't know if it's 2-4 or 4-4 or 3-4. Or, I mean, is there specific time?
I mean, yes. And some of them, like, I mean, if you have, like, you know, you used to play, like, the like, Israeli in weddings and stuff like
Hava
that.
Nagila.
So, okay, so yeah, you're so saying you played Hava
Nagila. That's like a 2-4.
That's a 2-4, but I don't know if you ever had to play, like, a hora. And how it's sort of the time sort of...
Can you kind of tell us the time without, I mean, tap it or something so I get an idea?
No. I mean, it's like sorry, been up since 5:30 a.m. so there's sort of this, the time doesn't necessarily... it's very dramatically different than some of the other... dance songs.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would say that. Whereas the freilach is just gonna have like a steady kind of like marching on feel,
like a 2-4 or 4-4.
And the bulgar still might have that, but it's there's emphasis in the beat that's gonna. Da, 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 that's going to make it feel differently if you're mm-hmm. trying to do that dance to the wrong kind of song. It's not necessarily going to fit.
Right. Now, none of the stuff I heard, if I remember from the clips, is a 3-4 like a waltz.
No, there are some klezmer waltzes, but you know we
for the most part it's not.
Yeah, this is a very like little sampling of some of the stuff that we're interested in, and there's a lot more.
So it's more of that type of boom bump boom bump or boom bump
for this,
bump,
yeah.
Or boom bump. Boom, bump.
I hope with the next recording that we do to get a lot more samples of different things. You know, after, because I re-recorded that, and then I went to Canada, and then I came back and was like, okay, I already know what I want to do for the next, you know, and added a bunch of new songs to the repertoire. And
well, when you release the CD, you should just put little paragraphs explaining each of them so we learn.
Yeah.
Because it's important I didn't even think about all of this stuff. A lot of the stuff I thought was something else. I mean, to me.
Right.
Like, that one sounded like a polka. And then the one that had that movie feel I would just like, that's movie music, you know, which is like wrong. So, but it's interesting to, it's interesting the style, and we, it, there's a history to it, and it influenced a lot of stuff like that song. If you listen to a lot of the stuff with the Andrews Sisters do even later on, it's influenced by that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes, it might be more commercialized and it might swing more and stuff, but you can hear the roots of it, mm-hmm. the scale, the way they phrase. A lot of that stuff comes back to the, you know, you got to go look at the origins. It's just like blues, mm-hmm. rock and blues. You go back to the origins, you see where the influences are. And this music, any type of dance music, it influences pretty much all of popular music at some place and another.
Yeah.
It's in, absolutely. It's and what's interesting is the instruments, too. I think that what you do with the clarinet and the trumpet in this and the violin, all of that stuff, the guitarist function is more straight rhythm and mm-hmm. it's chump, 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 which is like the old jazz band.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of feel it. You don't hear it as much. But if you stopped it, you'd mm-hmm. notice there'd be a big gap mm-hmm. in it because it kind of keeps it together.
Yeah.
The drummer is kind of keeping tempo, but he's kind of embellishing what the guitar is doing. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
But the guitar is the rhythm keeper, which is the old style big band.
Mm-hmm.
That was the function of the guitar.
Absolutely. And so, that's definitely coming from that influence.
Yeah.
For sure. But
so anyway, is how can people get a hold of some of this music? Is it is it out yet or is it coming out?
It's coming out. We're getting it up on the website and putting it up on
and that's SherryGoldsmith.com.
Yes. And then there's a / Sherry Beams, I think. Something like
yeah,
that.
You have a page with
okay,
Sherry Beams.
Yeah.
And Sherry Beams, SHIRIBEEMS, is also on Facebook.
Oh.
Yeah, you have a Facebook page.
Oh, the Sherry Beams. But not spelled like that. It's usually SH, or just one I instead of at the end, like instead of the two E's. SHIRIBIMS.
No? Oh, really? Sherry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But is it still pronounced? I have it wrong. Okay, so Sherry BIMS,
mm-hmm.
and that's still Beams,
mm-hmm.
so it's still pronounced the same.
Bims, Beams.
Sorry, I
Bims,
just get phonetic
Bims.
And I
no,
lose
no, no.
it up.
Bims, your Bims, your Beams, yeah. Sherry Bum, Sherry Beams.
So anyway, they're on Facebook, too. You can check it out. And also, too, there's some great shots of the band, and you can see all the different instruments, and it's really interesting. I mean, the sousaphone alone is fascinating in itself. We're out of time. I told you it'd fly
so fast,
by.
So fast. Yeah.
And she was worried, like, I don't know what to say. No, you'll have plenty to say. But we're going to end up with the song Cherry Bean.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to talk a little bit, this reminded me the most of like Hava Nagila in terms of dance mm-hmm. form, because they speed up. And I remember we used to do Hava Nagila and we would mm-hmm. just get frenetic at the end. Mm-hmm. We just keep going. And, mm-hmm. you know, to us, it was like a challenge. Can we tire them out? No, I said, but anyway, but it was kind of fun. But anyway, just before we play it, give a little more of a background of this song or any significance. And that is that very common to speed it up all the time?
You know, I don't know if this particular song is common to speed it up all the time. I'm not even, I think it might be, actually, I can't remember. I like, this is sort of, our version of it is sort of based off of this old music book that I got from my mom that she had from like the mm-hmm. 70s or something like that. And then like sort of inspired by that. And then also sort of influenced by the Barry Sisters recording. So we have like some of the intro lick is kind of, and the outro is sort of from their recording. And then it's sort of also based on this music that mm-hmm. I had forever and sort of just sang. And it seemed important to record it because the name of the band, you know.
That's like, true. She That's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you so much. And we're going to have you come back on and we'll bring the band. I gotta talk about some of the other people,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, this really was.
But it was great to finally get you on and actually talk about your career and what's going on. SherryGoldsmith.com. And again, thank you, Jessica, for introducing me to Sherry and coming on the other show. And I look forward to having you on back again. This is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to get more into the instruments, though.
Thank you.
Anyway, so this is Cherry Beam. And Everybody have a good week, and we will see you next week. But check this out. This is a lot of fun.
Chitty beam, chitty bomb, chitty beam, bomb, beam, bomb, 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 chitty beam.